El grupo Skank, un grupo brasileño, va a estar en Rivière. Van a estar tocando en el Club Lido. El show empieza a las 9. No tengo más informaciones aquí acerca de cuándo empieza, así que si quieren averiguarlo, estoy suponiendo que a las 9, ¿no? Música brasileña. That last one that we mentioned is this Sunday. The Brazilian band Skank, a hugely popular band in Brazil, will be at Club Lido in our very own Revere. Performing there this weekend, I believe starting at 9 o'clock is the show. We were unable to get further details. You'll have to look up Club Lido and find out more about that if you want to go. And I believe that not only is all of the announcements that we have for you, but is phenomenally done before we had to get running out the door. Usually the people who come on, the wonderful Music for Human Beings people, they come along behind us, they're like, oh, could you like wrap it up here, you know, taking your time. So, but anyway, we'd like to say one more thank you to all our fabulous guests. You guys were great. And put the microphones back on in case you want to say bye.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
We appreciate it all, and we'll look forward to seeing you in the future. People who are interested in hearing the rest of this, if you just caught the tail end, you can look it up on the WMBR archives. Probably 24 hours from now, it will appear at WMBR.org.
Actually, I think it appears like right after the show.
I lied. Okay, it appears right after the show.
So you can catch us right now if you want to. But we'll be coming back with more interesting stories next week, so we'll see you guys later. Thanks for listening to us today. Adios.
Chaucito.
Traveling. Hosted by yours truly, DJ Nomadic, every Friday, 10 p.m. to midnight on WMBR 88.1 FM or on the web at WMBR.org. Let me take you on a musical journey through time with hip hop, soul, funk, and so much more. Time traveling.
Dr. Jalis Sakran here with you on Music for Human. I am so here today. I just want to say marhaban to everyone. So marhaban.
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 Dobry wieczór.
We have a full house tonight here on Music for Human, and by full I mean full.
Yeah, man, lots of people here.
How full we are. Full of so many things.
Positive energy, man.
Full of positivity. Let me begin by welcoming you all here. Welcome to Music for Human. Music for Human is New Age Talk Radio here on WMBR every Friday at 7, which it is now, which is why we're here. And I'm pleased to have with me many, many returning guests, beginning, of course, with Ivan the Mellow. Ivan, welcome.
Господа, товарищи, добрый вечер.
Welcome, Ivan. Ivan, of course, is Siberian, and as we've said many times, that is enough. We also have Dr. Levine, mystic Jewish professor. Dr. Levine, welcome.
Welcome, thank you.
It's my deepest pleasure to be here once again.
And the very similarly named Dr. Levinson. Dr. Levinson, are you there through the glass?
Yes, I cannot see you, so I assumed you were calling me out. Thank you.
And we also have our Peace Child Peter. Peace Child Peter, of course, is the tea master.
How's it going, guys?
And do we have Xiao Yan coming through? Xiao Yan? Xiaoyan, perhaps the wrong microphone is on. Xiaoyan.
Hello.
Ah, there we are. Welcome, okay. Xiaoyan.
Hi. Thank you for having me here.
Xiaoyan is an expert on bone carvings of ancient China.
Yeah, yes.
Now, I've heard that those bone carvings were often performed on living subjects, and that they were known to produce the finest sculptures and musical instruments when the subjects were still alive.
Well, yeah, that's true, because the I know that the bone is very hard when it dries, so you like to carve it while it's soft, and if it's a particularly intricate structure, it must, of course, happen during the life. But there is no pain. Is that right, Xiaoyan?
Yeah, I would believe so.
I mean, presumably you haven't actually had your own bones carved. Yeah, but still, we like to believe that the subjects do not experience any pain.
Despite the screams and grimaces of their face.
Well, I think that's just, you know, embracing the spirit, man. That's like, you know, man, it's just like you're doing it. You're in there, man. No.
I think it's probably related to the power of positive thought. I find that when I have positive thoughts, what would normally cause me pain and may elicit screams and grimaces may still elicit those responses, but in my inner core I feel happiness and gratitude.
Yeah.
You just feel those rivulets of pain wash over you, and really in it you can find some sort of release.
Yeah,
it's almost like cathartic when you scream.
Precisely, there's some release. There's all the pain washes away simultaneously.
Now, I once went through a period of over a month where I only had positive thoughts. And it was very hard at first to keep the positivity flowing through me, even as I observed the great tragedies of life.
Yeah, but man, you just gotta, you know, you gotta keep those positive thoughts going.
Well, I noticed that after several weeks of positive thinking, I'm a very corpulent man, but after several weeks of positive thinking, I had lost over 20 pounds. And I started to gain the ability to levitate very slightly in the air. Like, my body was just lighter. And I think those positive thoughts are less dense than negative thoughts.
You know, when I really start to get weighed down by... And, you know, that's an interesting phrase when you think about it, because you really do get weighed down by negativity sometimes, you know. Especially I've been noticing with the media nowadays, and... you know, everyone's afraid of all sorts of things, but it's just weighing them down, man.
Yeah, I've met many people who have claimed variously to be able to levitate, and invariably, you know, they will offer to guide me in levitation. And the most that I can say for their programs is that I have learned to jump higher.
Well, levitation is not only about floating in the air. It can also be about walking with more energy or being able to stand on your toes more easily. And I think maybe our listeners should probably try this. They can sit in their home and stand on their toes, and if they think very positive thoughts and let the positivity flow through their entire body down to their toes, then they can feel their body getting a little lighter. And they may not actually float in the air, but they can actually levitate just a little bit.
You know, back when I was a young kid, I did a lot of interpretive movement. In the end, it ended up bringing me to tea, but at the time I noticed that, like, you know, man, I was having a bad day, then my movements, they were sluggish, and they didn't move well. It was like sandpaper on leaves. But I was thinking those positive thoughts, you know, then, like, I could fly. It was awesome, man. I could jump so high. It was great.
I've heard that many professional basketball players will actually hire a positive thinking trainer. So on the one hand, they may have their physical trainer who will help them condition their muscles and their material self. But they'll also have a spiritual positivity trainer, because it's well known, of course, this link between the ability to levitate or jump and positive thinking.
Hey, man, that's really great. I think everyone should think about getting a positive thinking trainer, or just a friend. Have a friend around who, you know, you can, like, bounce the positive vibes back and forth, you know what I'm saying?
So a positivity partner.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, not everyone can afford a trainer.
PCP, you really seem to be so positive as to maybe have the qualifications of a ballerina, so your movements are really graceful right now. Is it perhaps attributed to this positivity training,
man,
and thing?
It's really the positivity. I haven't been on the show for a while because I've been exploring my inner self. I went back home for a little while. I even went to the nation's capital, which was just awe-inspiring. I just feel all the love of all the world now, you know?
So how high can you actually get during these pirouettes?
Oh, I can get pretty high.
I know that you mentioned the nation's capital, and many of our listeners may not realize that you're referring, of course, to the District of Columbia.
Yeah, man.
But in many ways, I believe that Boston is the original capital. It's certainly the New Age capital of the country.
Oh, definitely. That's why I came out here.
That's right. Of course, the famous New Age guru Ram Dass was a professor at Harvard with Timothy Leary, and they together experimented in many ways, and they really made Boston and New England in general a home for New Age exploration and psychedelic exploration.
And we also have, our own Dr. Levinson, who is joining us for the first time, who can tell us, I think, a little bit about some recent pagan developments in the area.
Actually, I before that, did want to go back and ask more about an area outside of my expertise, the ballerina and the ballet area. I wonder if it goes both ways. If then people who have a physical predisposition towards lightness are also imbibing and exposing a spiritual lightness.
Well, you know, man, ballet is cool and all, but I didn't do ballet. I was a movement guy, you know? It wasn't dance so much as movement. But what was the question? I mean, was it about ballet? Was it about jumping? I don't understand.
My question, because we were talking about spiritual lightness lending us a physical sense, maybe even a physical motion of lightness, of levitation, if these masters of movement and of jumping were also, in a way, inspired to spiritual lightness, if it works in both directions, or if you have to start in the right place in order to get those benefits.
Dr. Levinson, I think it does, because Baryshnikov, one of the great Siberian ballet dancers, really also has this spiritual purity to him that can only be matched by Peace Child Peter. And perhaps it is an affinity for wearing tights.
Well, you know, the thing about tights, Ivan, is that they really free you, you know? It's really awesome. It's like this great contradiction. They're so constricting, but they're so loose, and they breathe so well. It's just like you're in your skin. You got another skin. You're dancing in your blood.
It's like wearing your real skin.
Well, of course, one of my frequent sayings is that clothing are the essential shackles of society, that the great symbol of our subjugation to each other and to our societal obligations is the fact that we have to clothe ourselves, and especially we have to put shoe wear on. And I think this is really, this wearing of tights can be the best we can get to our natural state.
Well, I find it interesting that you mentioned shoes, because, you know, when I was doing this movement, we never wore shoes. And I know the good doctor does not wear shoes, not even in the winter, which surprises me.
Yeah, I mean, simply from my rearing, I find it difficult to, I think I've used this phrase before, even, I cannot stand, and I really don't understand how all of you can bear these horrible little torture chambers and with these, sadistic designer labels. Really strikes me as something that is
odd.
Yeah, very masochistic from all of you to subjugate yourselves
to this experience. Sure, you know, they might be constricting, but at the same time, they're comfortable. They give you a cushion underneath, you know.
I've never found anything more comfortable than my own skin.
I agree that your skin is very comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, hey, I mean, I know we've got a lot of people in here, but we should get some callers.
Yeah, certainly, if you'd like to, I think we say this every week, but if you'd like to join us, the show is not about us, it's about the experience and the journey.
Yeah,
so
and the more people on the journey, the better
we are able to approximate that circle.
So call us at 617-253-8810.
That's right, 617-253-8810.
And today, of course, we're talking about
WMBR.
The power of positive thinking and what it can do to your life.
Yeah, let's bring a first caller in here. Caller, welcome to the air.
Olivanji,
Marhaban, am I mistaken in believing
that it's... Rainbow Beam.
Oh, no, yeah, yeah. Man, great to be here. You know, I put my phone to the laundry and it was really clean, but it wasn't working for several... I guess it's been a couple months.
Wow. And it works now?
Yeah.
See, that's
yeah.
positive thinking right there, huh? You
yeah.
just made it and it works.
It turns out all I needed was a power up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I had negative thinking that, you know, the washer, it creamed it, and then the dryer had finished it off. But in fact, the battery was kind of bulging a little bit. Like, I think it was the heat, but you just plugged it in, and it was cruising.
That's awesome.
The battery pack doesn't, like, the cover doesn't really fit on. It's kind of bulging out of the phone a little bit. But works okay.
And, of course, what are phones but transmitters of energy?
Yeah.
And hopefully that energy can be positive. When we have a phone conversation, we can use our intonation and our voice to spread joy throughout the universe.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, in New York City, there's a internet transmission on the Empire State Building, and it's been down all day, and I was wondering if somebody was standing in front of it and all that information was like going into their brain, you know, or something was absorbing it. Uh-huh. Like all that bandwidth.
And it's unbelievable to imagine that something man-made can transceive at such a large scale when here we are really unaided transceiving at already a pretty large scale.
Yeah.
I wonder if the accident with your phone was really not an accident. Maybe these accidents convey more energy and more positivity to us. Maybe your phone is energized in a way, even though it doesn't look the same.
Yeah, it's really funny. I kind of had a dream about that. Just about that idea that maybe not actually being accidental, but sure seeming like it. I was having this conversation with our HR lady in my dream. You know, I work at a consulting firm, and I was just having a nice, casual conversation, and then it kind of turned into a criticism on my job that I wasn't quite up to par, and then I was getting defensive about that, and I turned it around by, I was making this puppet out of this trout head, like this fish, and I was trying to flatten it out to make it more like a flounder by flattening it and kind of putting these metal spokes in to kind of make its gills open up its face.
Like making a fish car?
Yeah, and it just completely turned the situation on its head and turned it into this laughter thing where it kind of went from uncomfortable to laughter.
Mm. Have you ever tried this technique with the fish head in real life? Maybe your subconscious is trying to tell you something.
Yeah. I mean, one of the problems is that in a dream, you know, you can go from a conversation to like having just like a fish head in your hand, or you know, like depending on the dream, you can maybe be by a lake and reach in or something. In my case, I pulled it out. I think if you were a butcher, you could, or you know, if you worked one of those outdoor fish delis, you could pull that pretty easily in a conversation.
Yeah.
You could do like the flounder, the trout or the halibut to a flounder trick, or at least, or to a red snapper.
Hmm. And you know, in my work in symbology, we found there are many cultures. It's a cross-cultural phenomenon, especially in landlocked countries and regions that the fish is it breeds prosperity and it breeds positivity because of what it stands for. So that's a rich dream for you.
What about different kinds of fish? I don't mean to go into dream interpretation too much here, but kind of transforming one to another, particularly one with kind of a flatter, more one-dimensional face.
I also am not an expert, but from what I've seen abroad, that transformation, whether it's from narrow to wide or wide to narrow, can speak to a channeling of energy into a tighter pattern, or a broadening of energy into a lighter, higher plane.
Maybe kind of, yeah, that sounds like a spatial representation. Maybe it could also be speeding up, slowing down, just rates of change.
Yeah, and this is interesting because it reminds me of a dream I also had several nights ago where my mother was berating me. And I was very surprised. She was telling me that I was too fat. And she wanted me to get thinner. And this is also, I guess, instead of the fish, making the fish narrow or wide, it was making my own body narrow or wide.
So it's like you were the fish, but you were also the man.
That's right. And I think this also speaks to the importance of not only positive thinking, but living in both the here and the now also.
Yeah.
And gentlemen, my engineer is indicating that we have another caller, so let's bring another voice in with us here, if that's possible.
Malibanji.
Well, stay with us, Arthur.
Oh, yeah.
Caller 2, marhaban.
Marhaba.
Welcome to the air.
Hello there.
So,
what happens to be your topic today?
Well, caller, we're discussing the power of positive thinking as it applies to
everyday life.
I have a sort of intuition that this caller is not well versed in the power of positive thinking.
No, I'm actually a very negative thinker. I had a really negative experience yesterday.
Please do share with us, caller.
So I was buying ice cream, and I bought non-fat sugar-free ice cream, and I requested that this non-fat sugar-free ice cream be placed in a sugar cone. And the ice cream server said, "No, ma'am, we cannot do that for you." And then he put it in a cup for me and handed me a cone, and I had to put my ice cream in a cone.
Well, that seems really unusual. Do you have any idea why the server would... Is there a law against serving...
I asked to speak to management, but they refused to let me speak to management. So I threw the ice cream and the cone at the person, and the ice cream and the cone managed to be put... The ice cream managed to be put in the cone.
Oh, like...
Through that action.
Huh?
Wow. Through that action, the
through
ice
that,
cream...
Yeah.
That's another accident that is actually wish fulfillment again that we're seeing. With
yeah,
you.
But it was such a negative action, man.
But
that
even
sounds terrible.
Even out of an accident like that, now she's coming to the show and resolving and
I'm still
positivity.
Very negative about this. Why would he not put it in a cone?
Well, I think it's important.
Well, hang on. Yeah. Let's get on the positive thinking train. You know, positive thinking is kind of like thinking with a bicycle helmet on.
Yeah, it's safer. It's better. It's just a good idea, man.
You know, like if someone slams you in the head,
then positive
you just
thinking
get bumped up a little bit. That's all.
Yeah.
So the idea is that through the power of positive thinking, one is able to finally really get the best out of every experience.
But I don't think I would have gotten the best out of that experience if I thought positively, because in the end, the ice cream did end up in the cone, and I felt a little better out of being negative.
But it sounds like there's still a lot of negative energy that's trapped within you.
It'll be dissipated as soon as I go over there again.
Yeah, but what about the negative energy that's now in that poor server that was just following his instructions?
I think he had negative energy to start with, and he was just passing it around.
Well, I think it's important that positive thinkers often will encounter negative thinkers, and it's important for the positive energy to be more powerful than the other person's negative energy, and to allow ourselves to shine like the sun, like an exploding sun, an exploding star. And to overwhelm the whole solar system with our energy.
So you're saying instead
energy.
Of cursing the darkness, I should light a candle?
Yes, you should light the other person on fire.
Or light a supernova.
Well, just in defense of the caller, I would like to dissent and say that actually I think positivity is overrated. Sometimes it's refreshing to be very highly negative and act accordingly on your impulses.
You know, maybe this
I
is like...
I enjoy being negative.
Maybe this is like yin and yang, you know? You gotta have both sides sometimes.
But so. You see, what's happening here is that a negative moment has now invaded a positive atmosphere, and it has caused an entire shift in the whole thing.
Yeah, but maybe that's natural, you know? We've all been harping on how awesome the positive energy is, and now we're exploring the negative to see what happens there. It's totally yin and yang, you know, man?
So, Xiaoyan, also, I'm curious if So from my limited exposure to Chinese bone engraving, my understanding is that one of the basic tenets of the philosophy is to simply, instead of trying to carve in positivity, one carves away the darkness to reveal the natural elements of positive in the bone.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And actually, I'm pondering. We were all talking about positivity and negativity. But then, how do we really define what's positive and what's negative? I mean, it can be subjective.
Right, and this is the idea of the yin and the yang. Without yeah. one, the other is not defined, doesn't make sense.
And I have to say, his failure to put my ice cream in an ice cream cone has resulted in like 17 tellings of this hilarious story. So maybe he really, from his negative energy, really had a positive event.
Well, that could be back to the, you know, the universe just balancing itself out, you know. It's like all this negative energy, and then the universe comes in there, and it makes sure that there's even, so it becomes a positive thing.
I think a very apt analogy is, as you would have the red and the blue states, you have the pink and the blue spiritual states. So we, together with the color, are to the right of center in the blue spiritual domain, and the rest of this new age presence is to the pink left of center spiritual.
Well, one way of thinking about this event and its outcome is that it allowed the caller to express herself with her friends and to bond with them over this mishap. And I think this kind of retelling of stories can really help strengthen our social bonds and our friendships.
And it also helped me distinguish who are my friends and who really are my friends and who aren't, because those people who supported my behavior are really my friends.
And yet there are very ancient sayings that say that one should follow the person who is strong enough to criticize one's actions.
Yeah, except I was right.
One great thing about the way you acted also was that we were talking about positive energy, but it's also really important to live in the here and the now. And I think by acting somewhat impulsively, you are allowing yourself to live in the moment and to experience it.
Yep. And that person learned their lesson. You can't deny a dieting woman her fucking ice cream cone.
Well, unfortunately, caller, we have to take you off the air because... Yeah, the FCC really limits what we can broadcast. In any case, I think the message is clear.
One would call that incidental, I think.
In any case, we do have another caller to put on the air, so let's get that to try.
Yeah.
Caller 2, welcome.
Hey, guys. I'd like to. I kept thinking about condition. That word. I was thinking about.
Yes, Robert. Yeah.
That word. See the course of this conversation.
Mm-hmm. Conditions.
Yeah. Realizing conditions and the abilities and human stuff and.
What about washing dishes? I mean, isn't that thinking with a bicycle helmet on, you know, like, isn't that putting on your thinking cap?
It sounds, I mean, like, something.
Mm-hmm.
And,
Yeah, because if washing dishes is your vocation, why not get into the positive mindset, you know, about it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking that there's, like, really no positive or negative in the world. There's only condition.
Yeah, I've heard that theory that there's no positive or negative, that there's only mediocrity.
Well,
and
I mean,
kind of lukewarm.
Couldn't you define, like, the positive and the negative based on the results? So, like, you know, if you do something and then everyone's happy, you know, then that's positive, right?
You kind of grade reality on the curve, yeah.
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 And, of course, in Indian mythology, there are those who are predisposed towards the worship of Shiva and those who are predisposed towards the worship of Vishnu. And this shows that there are individual dispositions towards the negative and towards the positive, and one has to be aware of the power of the negative too, because the negative can be viewed as clearing a path for the positive, because sometimes there are hurdles and obstacles which need to be cleared with some degree of negative energy.
But what is the negative? I was traveling recently in Africa and I had 2 months of food poisoning, or the fallout from food poisoning, and when you go through that kind of intense pain for that long, you start to realize that it's just, we were talking about the value of pain earlier in the show, it's just that sensation, but it's not positive or negative. Again, to the caller's point, it's a condition. And the positive can have an uplifting aspect, but the negative does not have to. It does not have to be the opposite of positive. It can just be a condition.
Well, is it really is it really the opposite then?
No. No, it doesn't have to be.
Well, I think that was a great way of putting it, that you can just let it be. It can just be, and it is. And sometimes it's important to let yourself be and to exist.
Yeah, and not overthink all this stuff.
You know, I've heard that, just that positive side of most diseases, that idea that even if it's giardia and, you know, you have explosive diarrhea for, it can last months and months. Even still, like any disease is positive in the end, because you wish you were better, and then once you are,
then you really appreciate it.
The problem with that is it's too gradual before you get to that point. But even still, there's that positive side to it. There's really serious diseases like, I don't know, multiple sclerosis even still sets you free in the end. So,
well, it's that moment of the fever breaking. It's this really great moment. You're sleeping at night, you're delirious, you don't know what's going on, you see pink elephants flying, and then you have this intense sweat, and your bed is soaked with your sweat, and you're delirious.
You just dance in your blood.
You dance in your blood. And then it passes in 1 second, and you wake up with your bed wet with your tears and sweat and your body shivering in the cold. And
that's awful.
And the pink elephants are gone.
So this all ties into this very common theme that that which does not kill us makes us stronger. And it's a very common statement here, but coming in as an outsider, I've often wondered, why not cut off an arm? I mean, that will strengthen you, you know, according to this foolish aphorism. So,
well, I think the implicit thing there is that what happens to you that doesn't kill you, not what you inflict upon yourself.
Well, there are some.
Well, but let's dig in a little bit further, though. I mean, kind of, I think it's too simple to say like a malady or a sickness builds character. What if you really dig deep into a particular instance? Like,
adversity, right? That's what's supposed to make you stronger.
Well, I think you got to go with case by case basis. You know, like what about, like if you've been eating top ramen noodles, you know, and then you're coughing so much that you start throwing up all the noodles. Like, is there really a lesson from that, or a positive way of thinking, or is there just a big
don't
mess
so
all over
much
the couch?
Ramen. You got to learn to take care of yourself.
So I guess the difference of opinion here is
right
that
on.
that you know, some lessons are not about attitudes, but they are about life, about your way of living.
Yeah, don't eat top ramen all day, you know?
But they're also about attitudes and about the infrastructure of spirituality. Would a monk in the furthest reaches of the highest temple be treating his body and his worldview in such a way that this would even be a problem that he encounters?
Yeah, right on. I didn't even think about nutrition. And there's... Yeah, right on.
Of course, there are some groups of ascetic saints in India known as the sadhus, who are known to, for example, keep a particular arm raised for some number of years.
Mm.
So they actually won't let their arm descend below their head for up to 3 years. And this will involve tying it up sometimes or just keeping it raised. And eventually the arm will shrivel and the muscles will atrophy and it will become useless, a useless stump. So this actually, they do take this idea of almost cutting off the arm as something which makes them stronger. They take this philosophy to the extreme.
So that the point here being that instead of cutting off the arm in a single swift motion, that you actually gradually enjoy every fiber, every sinew dying and the connections.
It's not about enjoying it, it's about letting it be, letting it happen.
I mean, I don't mean enjoy as in like we have a good time, but I mean actually learning from each of those sinews dying.
Right, gain enlightenment from each shriveled muscle.
Well, let's get Robert in on this one.
It sounds like you're talking about some
Well, Robert, I mean, does not one perform the same act in the modern age when, for instance, I choose not to go out to dinner every evening, right? Cutting off that part of my enjoyment so that I can have one big enjoyment later in the week.
It's kind of, you know, a monk will raise their arm over their head for months on a time, and some people cut out their Olive Garden trips from like twice a week to one. It's the same kind of principle.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, it differs really only in degree.
Yeah. Some people go even further the other direction. You know, like they'll hold the pink sauce and go with the marinara.
I mean, even certain socially required behaviors, such as not urinating in the street, can be viewed as a form of abstinence and of self-control and celibacy.
Yeah,
and I've noticed that some people just don't follow those.
Yeah, society,
that's really funny. Because I think a lot of people who consider themselves normal really should be rewarded for their abstinence.
Yeah, man.
Precisely. It's society demands many sacrifices
One. What if they shouldn't be rewarded because, you know, they don't have that desire or that primal urge to go against, you know? They just they like the way things are, and if they had the freedom, then they would do the exact same thing anyway.
I mean, and
just watch Top Chef.
I kind of feel like it's the other way around, you know, the people that go against the society and in a non-harmful way, but like, you know, urinate in the street and they they're doing what they want to do, and they have to suffer the social ramifications, the social upheaval against them. They should be the ones to be rewarded because they had the courage and the strength to do what everyone told them they couldn't.
But
okay, I got a question now.
Go ahead. Well, all I was saying was that I believe that Shaoyan would have a lot of experience there with sacrifice because... you know, it seems to me that man since the beginning has been sacrificing things, and at present we are sacrificing behaviors, but at a different time and place we were asked to sacrifice other things. And Shaoyan, of course, has been exposed to many people who willingly sacrifice bone. in particular?
Yes, I've seen many people like this, and sometimes I almost want to do the same sacrifice myself, but the thing is, you can't carve your own bone, but I try to sacrifice in another way. For example, recently I went to a beach full of sandflies. You know, the sandflies bite you. And I just went there and sit there and let the sandfly bite.
So it's letting so sacrificing your blood.
Yes.
You know, that's actually very real. That's like spiritual, man, because you're like, you're giving yourself to feed other creatures. That's deep.
And I think
my body doesn't like that.
Well, that's the point of sacrifice, right, Robert?
Dude, that's all conditioned. I mean, if you, I don't know, do you like it?
No, yeah, no one likes it. That's why it's sacrifice. If you liked it, it would be.
It signals a very high spiritual level to be able to ignore the sandfly and to let them feast on you.
To restrain.
Well, not to ignore.
I'm kind of confused, though. I'm kind of confused because.
Humbris.
What about sitting around and watching House? Like, isn't that a sacrifice?
No.
Like letting your muscles degenerate and atrophy? And
no, man. It's so different, dude.
Okay.
Now, Arthur, I think the distinction there is it all depends on your urge. So your urge might be to sit there and watch House, in which case it is no sacrifice. You are giving in.
Okay. That makes sense. Okay.
But if you have an urge, precisely.
Yeah. Okay.
So and I would like to make one comment. I noticed Professor Levine mentions this. Ignoring the sandflies, but I think to really fully appreciate what Shaoyan means here, one would be forced to actually savor the experience, to fully appreciate every drop of blood that the sandflies extract, and to if not celebrate it, to at least learn from it.
So, in other words, we should appreciate the parasites as much.
That's kind of like letting the fish nibble at your toes.
Well, actually, I once observed that Gandhi was at the beach, and the sandflies were hovering around him, and what I thought they were pestering him, and I said, "Sir, do not the sandflies annoy you?" And he said, "What sandflies?" He hadn't even noticed that the sandflies were biting him. He was so spiritually elevated that the bitings were just part of a natural process, and he didn't even notice it.
Yeah, I heard a similar story about a man who was so he had been shot by an arrow, and he was so he was able to lose himself so completely in worship that in order for them to remove the arrow without anesthetic, he simply he lost himself in that way, and they removed the arrow, and he came out of the meditation, and he said, "Has the arrow been removed?" And so deep was his focus.
That's awesome. But that kind of goes against the sacrifice now, doesn't it? That wasn't very much of a sacrifice. He ran away from the pain.
Precisely, and I think that's a very good point. Like, it really does not mean that I numb my arm and then allow a zombie to bite it. I really have to be fully aware in order for the sacrifice to be
experience
complete.
It.
Precisely.
But Dr. Jellison, what would be the highest form of sacrifice?
Well, I'm not sure, but perhaps opening a plug in the bottom of your body and allowing the entirety of your life to drip out one drop at a time.
What about living a life entirely deprived of any spiritual enlightenment?
That sounds really bad, too.
An entire life.
But isn't that the most enlightening? Because you're depriving yourself. Like, if that's your goal, and your life doesn't have any, that's the paradox right there.
Well, in the doctrine of reincarnation, one of the stages, one of the lives one has to go through, is as a spiritually devoid persona. And that itself symbolizes sacrifice. One has to live life as an automaton, as a malevolent character almost. Mm-hmm. And that's just one of the stages of reaching nirvana or positive karma.
What about getting a parasite like scabies? Because you don't realize it's under your skin laying eggs, but it's still doing its toll. It's still not something you want to inflict upon yourself, most people at least. Does that put you know, people under the bridge in a new light? Are they our spiritual enlightened ones?
I don't know. Are you really experiencing that? I mean, I guess.
I mean, eventually you are, but in the early stages, they're kind of just breeding.
Yeah.
One sacrifice then might be to pick up a person living under a bridge and rub them all over you.
Yeah.
And if you find that difficult to do, then I think that might be a valuable sacrifice. There may be
that's
some.
That's a sacrifice
there, too,
because the stubble is abrasive.
Yeah. Certainly the stubble and
any germ phobias you have might just act
precisely
up like
any obsessive person might find this a very difficult experience, but I think it would be a valuable one. And I know that many psychiatrists will prescribe these types of sacrificial experiences to their patients. I'm sure Dr. Levinson can speak to that very well with his knowledge of the pagan practices. But also I'm curious, because we haven't heard from Robert what he thought might be the greatest sacrifice.
Well, I think that everybody is just asking for other people. That's what I think. And I didn't know everybody else's real conditions, so the way that I acted for them was not my condition. And I lost my condition.
So you are, I mean, this suggests that the greatest sacrifice might be being a genuine, honest person.
Or sacrificing, like, being conditioned, I guess.
Well, I think this whole idea of sacrifice is something that's really rooted in the Judeo-Islamic tradition and the Christian tradition. But in New Age thought, we don't really emphasize this issue of sacrifice. We really emphasize positive thinking as a more powerful force.
Sacrifice or guilt is the other big one.
Yeah, neurotic guilt. And these in New Age
original
thought,
sin.
Guilt and sin and sacrifice are sort of things to avoid. And with positive thinking, maybe they don't even have to be encountered in the first place.
I mean, I think that like one of our previous callers had a drive to think negatively, and so one could really, in a very, very specific way, imagine the sacrifice that she would have to make in order to regard the ice cream cone incident positively. It seemed like we tried, but it was very difficult for us to have her speak about it even positively.
Well, I think she was actually, I intuited that she was a very strong source of negative energy.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, I need to hop on a bus.
Well,
wish you the well.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
May the bus take you to higher and higher realms.
Oh, thanks.
Wow.
Namaste.
Masarama.
Namaste. Namaste. And,
That was a good radio show. I didn't
help me
understand.
Well, thank you, Robert. We feel like it only improves by having you with us.
Cool. So, yeah, I wasn't too sure about all the stuff you were talking about. Yeah, cool.
Yeah. And, I mean, Robert, do you consciously apply this attitude of being positive? Because, I mean, we've spoken, in this way many times, and I regard you as a fairly positive person. You have a positive outlook.
Yeah, I was just thinking about how you're talking about sacrifice before. This might be a different subject, but like what might be sacrificed to one person wouldn't be sacrificed to someone else because of existing conditions and like thoughts and what you choose to look at through time or what time is as a whole.
That's a really great thought. I mean, if you considered, one of the thoughts that came through my mind when I was thinking about the greatest possible sacrifice would be to sacrifice your son, your child, to a malevolent god. But if you were a psychopath or a sociopath, that itself would not be no sacrifice at all.
It would be actually giving in to a desire that you have.
So this shows us that sacrifice is really relative. It's really subjective and rooted in the personal subjective experience of the self.
I mean, a more mundane example, but no less compelling, would be the common theme that I've seen expressed here, which is the sacrifice of the lid on the toilet. Is it up or down? And to one person, the desired configuration is different from the desired configuration of another. And so changing the lid configuration could really be a sacrifice if you are one, but a definite, like, something that you are yielding to if you are another.
That's a great example.
Yeah. Yeah, I know I like, I'm more of a down kind of guy, but my partner's more of an up kind of guy, you know.
Are you talking about the lid of the toilet?
Yeah.
I never much understood bathrooms. They always made me nervous. Not enough so much as in terms of smell, or as in, or like public bathrooms, maybe I would say. I don't know about the smells of bathrooms. I don't think they smell too great or anything.
Well, considering what happened.
I like to be in the Malone. That's kind of like a pre-existing condition. The time of solitude. I remember a person said the only time they cried was in the shower.
Well, I've heard that some very spiritually elevated monks can actually use the toilet with the entire lid down, as if it weren't there. So it's sort of overcoming the material bounds of the toilet cover.
Well, you may not all believe it, but at one point I was a student of physics, and when I was a student of physics, quantum physics was in vogue. And this precise example was given by my physics professor. He said that if we knew the quantum number of every particle in a person's bowels, one could remove their entire voiding without having them actually void themselves, using a sort of quantum entanglement for teleportation. And this was about the time that I began to really get into the New Age.
It's an inspiring example.
Yeah, man. I haven't heard of that yet.
I think pooping is kind of funny. Or, I mean, not funny so much as, like... I mean, it's like an addiction to poop. Okay, so...
Well, on that note, Robert, I'm afraid we're right about out of time.
Okay.
Thank you again, though, for calling and joining with us today. My salam, Robert. And thanks also to all of my to my many co-hosts today, to Xiaoyan, whom we seem to have lost, and to Dr. Levinson, whom we've also lost, and to Professor Levine.
It was great to end on a note of laughter.
Thank you, Professor, and Peace Child Peter.
Yeah, I concur with the laughter.
And to Ivan the Mellow.
Yeah, this scatological piece was really brilliant. Possible.
I'm Addictor Jaris Sakran here on Music for Humans. We are on Friday nights at 7 p.m. here on WMBR 88.1 FM in Cambridge. Ma'a salama.
points for safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
We're supposed to be